Hello, it's Paul Scott here. Today I'm talking to the CEO and CFO of Traxys, so John MacArthur and Max Cawthra, respectively. So welcome, gents, and thanks for your time today.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Okay, just quick disclaimers then. So I'm not charging a fee for doing this interview. I do currently hold a small long position in the share, and I'm not giving financial advice or any kind of recommendation. The shares are currently £4.20 on the 27th of March today, which gives 117 million market cap. So starting off really then focusing on the 15th of February trading update, the share price has obviously been a roller coaster for the last few weeks, going from £5 down to £3.50, and currently it's sort of half the way back up again. So the main point seemed to be the Department of Transport franchise timetable and the sales cycle related to that. So how does that work and how does it affect Traxys?
The trading update that we put out a few weeks ago, I mean, the summary of that was we weren't as far progressed with H1 sales as we had intended or would have envisaged that we would have liked to have been at that point in time. And we just told the market, we were just frank and honest about where we got to. So the sentiment of that was H1 was good, but not as good as we'd have liked. It leaves more to do in H2. But the market forecast or our estimates at the time had remained the same. And I think just sort of telegraphing that perceived sort of risk into the numbers, the markets that have overreacted. But with regards to the reasons why we were down were sort of multifaceted. One of them was to do with uncertainty in franchise bidding, which we've seen before. There's been sort of various ups and downs in terms of how and when the real refranchises happen in the UK. It has a modest impact on our consultancy revenue, which is only a small part of the business. But a modest but important impact. And going forward, there looks to be a busy period in 2017. Some of that should fall in our current financial year, and if not, it will fall in H1, after July. But it's a relatively small impact. It wasn't the bulk of the perceived shortfall that we announced in the trading update.
Okay, so I've read it slightly wrong by the sounds of it then. So what was the main impact then?
Well, there was three things really. One was purely just timing off new software sales. So at the beginning of every year, a large part of our revenue rolls forward. We've got a lot of recurring software revenue under contract. We've got a lot of recurring or repeat project-based revenue. But every year there's obviously a growth element in terms of new products to new customers. That hadn't happened quite as we saw. It's just the vagaries of software selling, which, it is what it is. Part of it was to do with internal pressures, if you like, that we'd created or that had come from our growth over the past few years within our traffic and data services division, which we've now amended. And the other part, the final part, was the franchise bidding that I alluded to in terms of consultancy revenue and professional services and bid licenses associated with that. So it's probably three key things, and each element had between sort of £200,000 and £250,000 worth of contribution to our numbers.
I see. And I saw a note that Investec put out where they've sort of trimmed their forecast for the full year. I think it said something along the lines of they thought you could still do the original numbers, but they wanted to be more prudent, so they've reduced the forecast by about 8%. Is there any risk then which sort of implies that there might be a risk that sales might slip from H2 into the new financial year? I mean, do you see that as a risk?
I suppose there's risk in all sort of growth forecasts when they're not guaranteed. The advice that we got and the discussions that took place with the house broker were the market has, you've telegraphed risk into the market. The market's expecting a big miss now, even though we've told them that we're going to hit. We should take the opportunity to amend or Investec wanted to take the opportunity to curtail expectations, and that's what they've done. From a Tractus perspective, we're obviously trying to, you know, grow as fast as we can in a manageable way. And Investec are, you know, comfortable about where that new number lies. So it's about, I think it's about £800,000 of revenue shy of where we were before on the original forecast.
Okay. I mean, another point that one of my readers of the blogs questioned, saying the interim results were not bad at all. So, I mean, was it necessary to put out the RNS in February?
I suppose the hindsight's a great thing. We were just being frank and honest. You know, I've got no regrets about it, and the market is can overreact to sort of on the upside and the downside. We were just trying to be provide clarity. But sometimes people, it's only once you put the trading statement out that you get all sorts of calls, and people have interpreted things in different ways, and it's just quite difficult to preempt. So yeah, I think we did need to put something out, because we obviously have internal expectations of where we want each of our different divisions to get to, both sort of underlying organic trading and new growth. Yeah, it was what it was. I mean, I think with the roadshow this week, meeting investors and shareholders, that they've sort of understood where we're coming from now, and you've seen a bit of a bounce back in the share price.
Yeah, and actually one of the reader questions alludes to this, so I'll jump to that. One of my blog readers called Doug has said, what changed between February's trading update and the interim results, as you sound much more upbeat in the interims?
I think the short answer is nothing. it's all sort of in the eye of the beholder. We certainly didn't mean for the trading statement to sound negative. We just wanted to let people know that we were on a slightly steeper hill than we would normally be, given, you know, the half year point. So what's happened since then? We've had another month of trading, which has been fine. I don't know. I don't know if you want to add to that, Max, but there's nothing material that has changed.
No, absolutely. No, it's business as normal, and we're just focused on hitting our year-end numbers. You know, the trading update in February was the right thing to do. It just, as you said earlier, just gave a bit more clarity on the fact that there's a lot to do in the second half. And I think the message is still the same at the interims as it was on the trading update. There's a lot to do. We've got heads down trying to deliver those numbers. So, but there's risk in them. And we've provided a bit more clarity by trimming the Investec forecast a bit. So hopefully those numbers are certainly beatable. But there's a lot to do.
Great. Okay. Jumping then to longer term and acquisitions. I know you said in the most recent statement that the latest acquisitions are performing well. And I mean, this to me is certainly one of the reasons why the share has generally commanded a sort of a bit of a premium, is that you've executed very well on this acquisition strategy over many years.
Yeah.
So really wanted to touch on what the pipeline's like for acquisition opportunities currently.
Buoyant and unchanged, if you like. So just to give a bit of context here, when we came to market, we were a niche provider of software and services to the transport market. We diversified sort of organically and via reinvesting retained profit into multiple acquisitions over the years. And that's the strategy going forward. So when you're looking at Tractus and our numbers and our forecasts, you have to take a view on M&A. The only thing that's happened in the last 6 months is when we're not making those deals, if we haven't found something to invest in, the cash balance ticks merrily up. And we're now sitting close to, I think, about £13 million of cash, the vast majority of which is there for growing via the acquisition. So the pipeline's good. We're obviously a bigger company, so we can entertain doing larger deals. Although I think it's fair to say that our sweet spot in terms of what we've shown to be, where we've shown to have, you know, done a good job, if you like, is in the sort of 3 to 7 million turnover type business that is profitable and well run, and you can really get your arms around it from a due diligence point of view.
Yeah, Okay. And one of the things I was reading from somebody who attended a recent seminar or results presentation, rather, that you gave, they said, they mentioned an ambition you have to, double turnover and treble profits over the next 5 years. Is that, I hadn't heard that before. Is that the plan?
Yes, is the short answer. I mean, when people, we get asked quite a lot of questions about what's the end game for Traxys, and I never really have a satisfactory answer if they're expecting a sort of definitive position on that. Our mantra has always been manageable growth, as in, you know, growing a fair lick every year organically if we can, and then if you add in the sort of accretive growth and you roll that forward, you get to those numbers. So if you know, in any 6 month period, there'll be various ups and downs, but generally across the group, and if you look back at our numbers of since we've been a public company, that's exactly what we've done. And so the numbers that you quote, I mean, I don't have them in front of me, but yes, that in terms of an aspiration, that's exactly where we want to get to.
Okay, great. Next, these questions are not sort of structured really, they're just as the readers submitted them, so we're jumping about a bit. The next question comes from one of my readers called Ramridge. Now, he's queried how come the 20% growth in revenues in the first half only led to about a 2% increase in adjusted and diluted earnings per share.
Yeah,
that was disclosed in note 5, I think.
Yeah, that's a fair question. I think, the revenues are up 20% on the previous period. But then I think profits are only up 10%, so that's got part of the impact. And then you've got I think last year's numbers had some tax one-off tax gains in there, which we haven't repeated this year. And then the final point to consider is I think the numbers in there, you're looking at statutory versus adjusted numbers. So you've got, it depends which, your revenue number might be up 20% when you're comparing the impact of Australia, because we disposed of an Australian business which was non-core last year. But when you start looking into VPS numbers, what you're adjusting for either includes or excludes Australia. So it does get a bit tricky. Mm. So I do take the point that, yes, if revenues are up, then EPS should be up. But I think when you factor in all of those into the mix, it's not that straightforward.
Yes, and I think there was an increase in the share count as well. Not a huge increase, but it did go up, didn't it, I think?
Yeah, that's right. We have a very popular share option scheme, which is great for our staff, and we issued a few shares to as part of the SEP and OnTrack acquisitions last year. So they have a small impact, but not massive, mm-hmm. because we're quite tight on dilution. But when you factor all of those into the mix, it's a fair point, is that.
Okay. Right, now moving on to the data collection side of the business. Doug has asked, please could you expand on the opportunity offered by data collection in the traffic and data division? Increase the margins to match those of the rail technology division?
That's certainly the plan. So when you look at the two sides of the business, a lot of people get sort of excited by the recurring high margin software elements, and I think we've got about £11 million plus of recurring software revenue under contract. From both sides of the business have opportunity. I mean, with regards to the lower margin traffic and data services side, part of the opportunity is making that business more efficient internally. So we alluded to this in the trading statement in terms of we took quite a sizable pot of extraneous costs out of that division between the months of September and January last year to this January, which is good. There'll be an impact, part impact this year, and then there'll be the full impact in the next financial year. And then in terms of sort of going forward, we're looking quite closely at how we actually take that business to market in terms of the workflow, if you like. So we have a lot of kit, physical kit, that gets installed in an environment that captures and analyzes traffic flows, pedestrian flows, how people and vehicles move around an environment. One of the short-term opportunities is trying to automate how we do that. So we're really interested in technology which allows us to automatically process video feed and the data that we collect, so that we don't have to do manual interpretation of that. And so far, the last few years, it's been we've had a number of false starts area because the technology just hasn't been there to have the efficacy that we require. But increasingly, especially with sort of machine learning technology and software that we're beginning to see, there's a good potential that we can actually grab hold of some of that stuff and have meaningful gains in the margin or improving the margin on that side of the business. So rather than thinking about increasing the revenue or the market share of that business, which obviously we're interested in doing, I think in the short term we're more interested in whether or not we can sort of match or begin to increase the margins so that it looks more like the other half of our business in terms of the pure software play.
That sounds interesting. Would that be using bought-in software, or were you developing your own software to automate that type of thing?
It would be looking to secure the ideally exclusive rights on software that we can use that perhaps our competitors can't.
Okay. Right, moving on next to the remote monitoring equipment side of things on the rail side. I mean, that was quite a small, was it 1.3 million turnover, I think, wasn't it, from that division? Which seems, I mean, that's become a lot less important part of the business by the sounds of it.
It's still important, it's still very profitable. As Traxys has sort of diversified and grown elsewhere, obviously the relevant importance to the overall numbers is reduced, which is probably a good thing in terms of diversified risk. The opportunity for that business, we have a sort of entrenched and preferred relationship with UK rail infrastructure, which is good and profitable, and hopefully it will continue to be so for many years to come. But really the growth is one of internationalization, so it's finding other rail infrastructure customers further afield that we can leverage into and hopefully provide the same benefits to. So at the moment, all of our efforts at the moment, or certainly the vast majority of our efforts, are in the US, looking at Class 1 heavy freight railroads. And there's eight or nine major Class 1 railroads. And then there's a whole host of mass transit, public transit authorities. So we have sales efforts ongoing in the States. And whilst the model is, I mean, it takes time to sort of educate the client and get them to trial our kit. We had, $500,000 worth of revenue that was announced just before Christmas, and that order will be delivered in full by the end of April. So I know that shareholders are sort of impatient about seeing this come to fruition, but it's going. The timing of this is very much in line with what we saw in the UK many years ago, and people are obviously quite circumspect when it comes to allowing a private contractor to mail remote condition monitoring technology to their network.
Yeah, actually, because I think I remember a year or two ago when we spoke, you said, don't expect sort of instant fireworks from this. It's going to be a gradual build. And actually, two of the readers, my blog readers, Doug and Penguin 8, have both asked questions on this on the USA. I think you sort of half answered it, really, but they've basically, both of them have said, progress seems slow. Is it proving too difficult, or are you just not pushing hard enough?
I think we're pushing at the appropriate level. We've talked in the past about whether or not we should, have a capital expenditure, a one-off hit, if you like, and spend a lot of money, open offices, hire staff, and sort of go gangbusters on it. But our preferred approach is the one that we're taking, whereby we've got two dedicated sales resources in the States, and they're working hand in glove with fairly major Class 1 names. I mean, if I mentioned them, you'd know who they were. And that's what we feel comfortable with doing. So it's low risk, it's low cost, and we believe that it's the right approach. And that's the strategy that we're comfortable with at the moment.
Okay. Now, going back to a sort of accounting query here, one of my readers called Ed has asked, he's noticed there's a reducing trend in both operating profit margin and return on capital employed over the last few years. What can be done to restore previous more attractive metrics for profitability and ROCE?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. And I mean, you're correct in that operating margin percentage has gone down in percentage terms, but in absolute terms, in terms of pounds value on the operating profit level and EBITDA level, that's gone up. And I guess it's compared to where we were a few years ago, I think looking back at old accounts, we might have done, say, I don't know, 700k of EBIT on 3 million of revenue, whereas this year we'll do 8 million of EBITDA on 35 million of revenue. So I suppose it's a dilemma. Which approach is better? I think we tend to focus on absolute pounds value, and that's what the market ultimately values us on, is bottom line profit rather than the percentage. But I do take the point that analysing the percentages is a useful metric. But as we've got bigger, the group has become more diverse, and we've got all kinds of product and software and service offerings these days. And I just don't think that, with that diversification and diversifying the risk comes a slight adjustment and dilution in the margin. On the ROCE point, again, that's understood. But, John and I, when we're structuring deals, I think people should perhaps focus on those terms and what we're paying for the deals and how they work out. And are they good deals in their own right, rather than getting too bogged down in the metrics on the ROCE? But yeah, it is both operating margin and ROCE are valid metrics, but I think there are other metrics you could use instead, which we tend to focus on internally, which might present a different picture. A good question.
Thanks.
Paul, just on that point, I do think, I mean, I'm no accountant, and ROCE is not, nor historically it hasn't been a metric that we typically use internally. I think it's a valid metric if you're looking at a business that has one offering and that offering is quite consistent, be it software or services or whatever it is that we do. As we grow via acquisition, sometimes we're buying software businesses, sometimes we're buying services businesses, which inherently have a lower margin, which kind of, I'm not sure that ROCE is the best metric for trying to sort of compare apples with oranges with previous iterations of Tracsis, which sometimes are more skewed towards software, sometimes in any given year might be more skewed towards professional services. As Max says, I think that the important thing and the thing that we do measure is how much, when it comes to M&A, what are we paying and how much profit and visibility and future profits does that buy? So if we end up buying a company that's doing, say, £1 million of profit, when it comes to, buying a project, a consultancy business that is maybe only offering a 10% margin, that doesn't mean it's not a good business to buy. It all boils down to the price.
Yes, fair point. And also, I suppose the businesses that you started off with were exceptionally high margin businesses, weren't they? So, you're not going to find other things that generate such massively high margins, I would imagine, necessarily.
Yeah, we've looked at a lot of businesses over the years, and that's a fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, last of the reader questions now. Then, Trident has asked, why did financial year 2016 revenues increase by 28%, but admin costs went up a higher percentage, 36%, and are the recent cost savings related to this disparity?
Last year, in 2016, we did two acquisitions, so you've got a part year impact of those two deals. So you've got part of a year of SEP, which is events and business, and that's geared towards the summer months. So depending on what period you're looking at, then you'll get, there'll be a certain only certain months included, and that was the case last year. And then also last year, you've got the impact of OnTrack, which we bought midway through the year. So again, that one's factoring in, and the disposal of Australia. They're all points to consider. But if you do look at the overheads have gone up, I agree. But we've been investing in several new products. So Enterprise and Day One are two products that have been in development for a long period of time, and they, we're hopeful of securing more sales for those soon. But equally, we our traffic and data services division did grow to become the largest data collection company in the UK, and we've grown very rapidly. And I think, as we've announced in our recent results, we've had to take some measures to address some of the internal challenges there to make us more efficient. So I think if you look at this year in question, we'll give you a full year, I suppose a clean year, without the disposal and with a full year impact of both acquisitions. And I think we've already alluded to the fact that we needed to make some changes to our existing business, which we've now dealt with, and that the benefits of that should come through in the second half.
Okay, great. Well, that's the end of my questions. I mean, are there any points that you'd like to cover that we haven't already discussed?
Not really. I mean, I think the trading statement and the interim results are probably self-explanatory. Traxys, I think people should, it's probably worth bearing in mind that Traxys came to market in 2007. We only raised £4 million in total as a public company. And, you know, growth is non-linear, as I'm sure you can appreciate, Paul. So in any 1 6-month period, our numbers can be, our organic underlying numbers, they can sometimes be up sort of significant double-digit percentages. And sometimes they can be flat. I think the metric that people should sort of rate us on is full year numbers rather than any interim period. The company's in rude financial health in terms of cash flow, cash generation, and retained profit. And that's the sort of fighting fund for the future. So whilst organic growth can be variable, and it always will be in the markets that we operate in, especially traffic and transport, which is subject to this, vagaries from the Department of Transport and rail owning groups, we try and smooth out those bumps with M&A, and that's really the, you know, shareholders and investors have to take a view on that because it is fully half of our model. But aside from that, I think it was, you know, we remain well positioned for the second half, and the changes that we've made to our traffic and data services division put us on a really good footing for the future. It's perhaps overdue, but you know, there's a lot of changes that took place in the last 3-4 months.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, and I mean, I saw in the Investec note, I really liked a phrase they put in there where they said near the end of their commentary, they said one soft half does not wipe out 10 years of shareholder value generation, which I thought was a nice way of putting it, really. And as you say, very true, given you only ever raised £4 million from the market. So
yeah.
Okay. Great. Well, I think that wraps it up from my end, unless there's any other comments you wanted to make.
No, nothing else from me, Max.
No, nothing more.
Smashing. Well, thanks for your time, gents.
Pleasure.
And we'll speak again, I don't know, 6 months or a year or whatever.
Sure.
Fantastic. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.